So tonight we're talking about Tzimtzum. Tzimtzum in modern day computer science would be called a zip drive. If you have to zip a file, what do? A zipping basically takes all the parts of the file and puts it down into one smaller size file, but within it is everything. So once you open it, everything pops back out. That's a zip file. That's what Tzimtzum is. It literally translates as contraction. Now, it's not a proper translation. Essentially, it's like this. Let's call God's light, light. Even though it's not light, it's the anthropomorphic understanding of whatever that thing coming from God is. It's the beyond godly understanding. So we're going to call it light. So if God's light had to come into this world directly, we'd all get zapped. Why? Simple. Why? Why would we get zapped if God's light was coming in directly with no filter?
Too powerful.
Why? Simple. God is infinite, we're finite. Infinite light will zap finite. So God, an infinite God, has to create a finite world. The process is called Tzimtzum.
Okay.
For God's infinite light to be created and to create and manifest and sustain a world that's finite, we need Tzimtzum. So let's talk about this. Kabbalah examines the very origins of creation. In the Kabbalah, God is referred to as Ein Sof. Ein Sof means no end. That's the way Kabbalah refers to God. The reason is if Kabbalah called God Kajumaba, what would you say? Wonderful. What does that mean? Exactly. So in order for us to understand what is God, we have to say God is infinite. What is infinite? We have no idea what infinite is. Infinite is much, much more than our finite world. Infinite is not finite. So if we are bound by time and place, if everything we know is confined to this world, everything we know is confined to time and place. Everything. Tell me what happened before the world was created. Tell me what happened before time began. Before, day one, what happened? Oh, what's above space? What's below the waters of the ocean? Below all the sands, underneath the waters of the ocean, what's below there? What?
Rocks.
Rocks, lava, right? And what's below that?
The center.
And what's below that?
We go the other way.
Everything we know is limited. We have to say that we live in a limited world. Everything we know is limited. If you threw away all the watches of the world, there would still be time. Because that's the world we live in. We live in a world of time. People will still age. Things will still evolve. There will still be evolution, whether or not you look at your watch. Whether or not you count your birthdays. So we live in a world of time. Now, God's world is not limited by time. It's not limited, period. So we call it infinite. Ein Sof, with no end. Do we know what that means? Absolutely not. But I will tell you one thing. If you stick with me for a lot of weeks, we will have a much better understanding than this basic understanding of what Ein Sof is, because Kabbalah goes into great detail about what is infinite. And we know a lot about that world, if you're interested. But I'm not going into it tonight. So, Ein Sof, which is what Kabbalah calls God, is no end. In the act of creation, God made something very finite out of the infinite. My question tonight is simple. How can you create the finite from the infinite? If infinite is infinite, where does finite come from? It's interesting because I'm gonna flip the question just for a second, just for fun. If God is infinite and not finite, then God is finite to infinity. God's limited to infinity. So God must be infinite and finite. But my question is, how does finite, how does limited, how does time come from something that's timeless, that has no time, that's beyond time, that's higher than time, that's greater than time? Where does it come from? Have I baffled you? Okay, we can stop here. Now, I'm going to give you a lot of background here, because I want you to really get a feel for what Kabbalah is not what Madonna thinks it is, okay? It's much deeper than that. It's much more powerful than that. So I'm going to give you the background, because I want you to really understand what we're talking about here tonight. While some Kabbalistic texts speak of a gradual contraction of divine power as it streamed into this finite world, eventually reaching a point of complete concealment in this world, the Kabbalah of the Arizal, we spoke about this last week, has a very different view. According to the Arizal, there was a quantum leap from infinite to finite. He calls this leap tzimtzum, contraction. So, in order to visualize how this happens, the Eitz Chaim of Rebbe Chaim Vital, who Rabbi Chaim Vital was the primary teacher, a student of the Arizal, and he was the one who wrote down all of his teachings. He gives the following structure. The power and ability of the Ein Sof, or what's called the Or Ein Sof, which means the light that has no end, the light of God. Because physical light is perceived as being ethereal and intangible, and because light gives life and warmth, it is often used in Kabbalah as the metaphor for divine power. But really, there's no light. Light is the best metaphor that we can use to describe God, to describe this process. But it doesn't really, light is not really the right word. We don't even know what that word is. We can't relate to it. It's not physical. Light is physical. So, the best explanation we can give is light, but it's not real. So, I'm giving you just a little background here. Now, in the initial stage of revelation, the prevalent manifestation was that of the infinite light, or what we're calling the infinite light, contained within the Or Ein Sof, which is the light of God. In the most sublime way was the potential for the finite. However, initially, it was undistinguished from the powerful manifestation of the Or Ein Sof, of the God's infinite light. In order for creation to take place, it was necessary for someone to conceal the infinite light, creating a vacuum for the finite light to be revealed. One can draw an analogy to a ray of light from the sun. While it's in within the sun, the ray has no independent identity, because it's totally nullified by the greater light of the sun itself. Only when the ray has left the sun Can it be recognized and perceived as having an independent identity? It's the same ray. It's the same exact little ray of light. In the sun, there's billions, trillions of them. But when it leaves the sun, it becomes the ray of light. It takes on a life force of its own. Let's go even further than this. A parallel can be drawn from the world of teaching. Imagine Albert Einstein entering a primary school and being invited to teach a class of elementary mathematics. For the genius of Albert Einstein to communicate with the child's mind, it's necessary that he put to the side all the theories and complexities of advanced mathematics and focus on basic addition. In time, the child he's teaching may progress to study mathematics in high school, college, and then university. The student may even become a professor of mathematics himself. He may even surpass Einstein in brilliance. However, in the first stages, the end product was concealed. The same is true with regards to Tzimtzum. God purposefully drew back the infinite to create a space which the finite could be realized. So, what did Tzimtzum happen? Tzimtzum is God taking the unzipped, the uncensored God, complete, 100% pure, taking all of that, pulling it away from, almost from him, from God, pulling it away. And then maybe there's a millionth of 1% left from that creating finite. To us, it looks like this. Let's use the analogy of the sun again. Imagine you have the sun. Now, if you go outside during a solar eclipse and you look at the sun, what happens? Anyone?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Are you tired of swiping right on every dating app out there and still getting nowhere?
Are you convinced that you'll forever be alone, surrounded by nothing but cats and empty takeout containers?
Hi, I'm Aliza Ben Shalom, the host of the new show, Jewish Matchmaking, which you can find on Netflix.
And I'm the Love Rabbi, Rabbi Yisrael Bernath, and we're inviting you to join us for Matchmaker Matchmaker.
Each week, we'll answer one of your pressing relationship questions, from how to get over your ex to how to deal with your partner's annoying habits.
So if you're ready to laugh, cry, or maybe even find love, then tune in to Matchmaker Matchmaker, and it's available now wherever you listen to your podcasts.
What happens if you look at the sun during a solar eclipse?
Burns the retina of your eye.
It can burn the retina of your eye. Now, if you experience a solar eclipse and then you go into a building and you look through the stained glass window at the sun, it's green, the stained glass window. What does the solar eclipse look like? Can you see it? Yeah. Will it burn the retina of your eye? It even looks green. That's now the pure sun that if you looked at directly outside will burn the retina of your eye. When you go inside and look at it through the stained glass window or through a tempered glass, it won't burn you and it won't look like it's sunlight. It'll look green. That is Tzimtzum. If God were to take the infinite light and say, I'm making a world, it would have burned into oblivion. I'll give you a little glimpse into a little more advanced Kabbalah. God made worlds before this one. This is not the first world God made. And other worlds were. In the beginning, the worlds were turned into ash in a second. This world stayed and continues to stay. Why? Because God is creating Tzimtzum at every single moment, at every moment, there's tzimtzum happening. If God wanted to destroy the world, how would he do it? Stop creating. No floods, no fires. Stop creating. Because every single moment, this world is created anew. Brand new. At every moment.
But if God can still come through and create and recreate every molecule of every atom on the planet, just at every moment, why has the light been drawn down to a minuscule ray? Isn't it our perception of it that makes it so? And if we were to think that we have access to more of it, we'd accept more of it.
What was that old saying, quote from the movie, I don't know which movie it's from, but you want the truth, you can't handle the truth. Because we can't handle it. We can't handle it. We're limited physical beings. You see, you're asking a very good question. I don't want to dodge the question. I want to take the question head on, but I want to tell you that I need to give you more information before I answer the question. You need to have a little more background before we can debate this properly on a Kabbalistic level. Because we're finite. And just think of it this way. I'll give you some food for thought. God created a being that could deny God's existence. Think about it. Anyone ever study carpentry? We have a carpenter here.
Wow.
A professional
woodwork.
Custom woodwork, right? That was not a paid for advertisement. Diane, you make a table. Imagine one day you make a table, gorgeous table, perfectly. You carve out those legs and they're amazing in the tabletop, and you're like, wow, this is just an incredible table. And the table stands up and says, bye, have a good day. You're like, hey, I just spent 2 years making you. You stay put. No, bye. Oh, by the way, I just want to let you know, you didn't make me. Oh, I don't know you. I don't want to know you. I actually don't even think you exist. You didn't make me. And the table walks off. Bye. God did that in this world of finite, in the lowest of all worlds, Kabbalistically, in the lowest of all worlds, God made beings that have complete free choice. What we mean by complete free choice is they have the free choice to deny that God ever created them. That's a little food for thought.
Have the conditioning that you are that you are of God. You have the conditioning of hum, you close the light down. Personally. And then you're open and receptive to God. And here's the real challenge. Who says we're finite? If we're souls having a human experience, who says we're finite?
We're not souls having a human experience. We're a fusion of body and soul. We're a fusion of spiritual and physical together.
So why are we finite?
We're finite because we're the soul in the body is finite, yes. But the soul is connected to an infinite. The soul is connected to a piece of God. So there is a part of the soul.
Back to God.
Not exactly. And again, I wish I could give you more information because the more information I'm going to give you, the more you're going to go, aha, aha, aha. So, again, if I tell you, okay, fine, there's two souls. If I tell you there's really three souls, right, there's a natural soul, there's an intellectual soul, there's a godly soul. See, this is all stuff that we haven't even gotten to yet. But once we get there, you're going to go, aha, 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 aha. And I need to give you, I want to start off somewhere. And you're going to have a lot of these questions. Everyone's going to have questions like this. And I feel bad going into it now without giving you the proper education for it to be able to handle the question. Because I'll tell you this much. Once you have the education, the conversation is not going to look anything like this. It's going to be a very different conversation. Because we're going to be talking about the intricacies of the different souls. We're going to be talking about what kind of light it look it is. The elements of light. We're going to talk about the intellectual faculties, the emotional faculties. It's not psychology here. We're talking tonight about the basis of creation. Why an infinite God would create a finite world. It's insane. In our world, if we think about it too much, it can go crazy. It's not meant for us to think about. We're not asking the question so that we can think about the question. We're asking the question tonight to get a concrete answer tonight. This is Tzimtzum. The concealment of the Or Ein Sof, of the light of the infinite God, is called the Tzimtzum HaRishon, the first contraction. This first Tzimtzum was the most radical in the sense that it was the quantum leap that allowed the finite to surface. It must be noted, just so you know this, that the concealment of the light of the Or Ein Sof, the light of Ein Sof, did not affect Atzmut itself. What is Atzmut, anyone? Atzmut is God. Atzmut means essence. The God's essence is Atzmut. We'll talk about this more. We'll learn in great detail. We'll have a class just on what Atzmut is. It didn't affect Atzmut itself. Because Atzmut is the essence of God, which transcends everything, including changes. You see, there's different ways that God appears in this world. There is Sovev Kol Almin and Mimale Kol Almin. Basically, it's like this. There's God in a way that God is everywhere, right? God is here, there, and everywhere, up, down, right, left, and all around. Here, there, and everywhere, that's where he can be found. There's God everywhere. And then there's God in your toenail. So, when God created the world, there's two ways that God manifests within this world. There's the God that manifests in a peripheral sense. Like, say, God created the world, and voila, the great God. And then there's God in every single aspect of this world. Every little detail, every cell, every organism, every molecule has God within it. Soviv, Kol Almin, is the way, it's just the big God. The big, great, almighty, powerful, sublime God. And then the Mimale, Kol Almin, is the way that God fills every nook and cranny of this world. So, I want to give you an interesting, you guys like Bible, I'm going to give you a little quote from Malachi. What did Malachi mean when he said, I, God, have not changed? He meant that God remains the same after creation as before creation. He remains totally aloof from any change within the creation. All change took place within a manifestation of the revealed power of the Or Ein Sof. God is still the same. Even though this world is created, somebody can very easily say God's not the same anymore, right? Because God created a world where God's light is not infinite anymore. It's not true. God's life in Atzmut, in Ein Sof, in the realm of God, of infinite God, God's light is exactly the same. But then God goes, this is what it is. We're going to go into it. There's Or Ein Sof, which is also called Atzmut. Have I lost everyone? It seems like I've lost you. Have I lost you?
No, we are just trying to digest.
Okay. There is Yetzira. There's Bria. There is, there's also Atzilut. Fine, we should do that. We should do that. Atzilut, Bria, Yetzira, Bria, and Asiya. And then within Asiya, there is physical, spiritual. Hey, you guys asked for it. I'm giving it to you. This is God's infinite light. Or Ein Sof Atzmut. This is God. No filters, nothing. It's infinite. Now, the level... Again, this is not, we're going to go through a lot of this soon, but I want to give you a little background anyway. This is not the Arizal's interpretation. This is the Baal Shem Tov's interpretation. So, this level is pure. No, nothing beyond God can get into this level. There's nothing there. Then there's the highest order of the worlds. There's four worlds, really. 1, 2, 3, 4. Just so you know, it's 1, 2, 3, 4. This is beyond the worlds. There's nothing Tzimtzum about this world. This is complete before Tzimtzum. The world of Atzilut is the highest. It's like right under the throne of God, let's say. If God is a king, and we're using king as a metaphor here, Atzilut is the highest, right under the throne. Then there's Yetzira. Yetzira is like the second level of contraction, and that's like spiritual beings, and I don't know, some people say that there's angels there, but some people say there's not, there's even higher than angels. Most people say that this is the world of the angels, called Bria, which is level 3. That's where all the angels hang out, which is interesting because when the Bible says, and the Torah says, that God created us, let's create man in our likeness, in our image, let us create man, who's us?
The angels,
right? So God is already here. God is already in the third level. God's already created the level 1 contraction of Atzilut and the level 2 contraction of Yetzira, and now God's in the level of Bria, which means that God is already ready to create Asiya. That's our world. The fourth world is our world. We live in the world of Asiya. Asiya means action. We live in the world of action. That's why if we don't do anything, we defeat the whole purpose of being here. We must do. We must perform. We must act. Because our world is the world of action. Talk is cheap, Obama. Yeah.
So God reduced himself in Atzilut, and then again he contrasts himself.
Exactly. Into Yetzira, and then again into Bria, and then again into Asiya. Now, Asiya has two levels. Asiya Ruchni and Asiya Gashmi. The spiritual level of Asiya and the physical level of Asiya.
The second one, it was spiritual
beings, emanation.
Okay.
I don't know what they call it. I've never found the definitive story of who's in Yetzira.
Okay.
Maybe one day we'll find out.
Okay.
For now, I don't know.
You're not from that world.
You're
not from that world.
No, not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
I haven't made it up there.
Okay.
I'm still climbing the ladder.
Okay.
So
what's the first world?
The Asilut is like under the throne of God. So I don't know. I can find out if you really want to know who hangs out over there, who chills there. I can find out. I don't think it's very chilling. It's probably very hot. But
we don't insist.
But if it really matters to you, I can find out who hangs out over there. But what matters to us most is these two worlds. So when God says, let us make man, God already created these worlds, obviously, right?
Yeah.
So that's the world of the angels. Now, our world, the world of action, Asiya, has two levels. Asiya, Gashmi, and Ruchni, physical and spiritual. So we, right now, are obviously in the
physical
world. Directly connected to our spiritual world. Which means, I'm going to go somewhere. Maybe you don't want to go. Where's heaven? Right here. Heaven is right here. We just can't see it. Because heaven is in the spiritual world of Asiya. What?
The heaven is on earth.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is it a metaphor or
what?
That the heaven is on earth.
No. Well, heaven is right.
Because even our spiritual souls couldn't handle Bria.
That's right. Our spirit. So we can constantly stay in Asiya. Two levels. Right now we're in the Asiya, the physical part of Asiya, and then heaven is the spiritual part of Asiya. The thing is that Asiya is not always limited. The physical part of Asiya is limited to time and place. The spiritual part of Asiya is not limited to time and place. So, for example, the Talmud says that when you study the teachings, for example, right now we're studying the teachings of the Arizal, whoever's teachings you study, that scholar comes and sits right next to you as you're studying and helps you along and guides you in the study. Now, is it metaphorical? Is it real? The Talmud is very literal. Talmud is a book of law, not a book of mystics. So Kabbalah will tell you that the Talmud is very real when it says this. That when you study the book of a particular scholar, that scholar comes, whether that scholar is 2,500 years ago or 3,500 years ago, comes and sits next to you. How is that possible? Because of the two levels of Asiya. Heaven is right here. I should have put a note on the door. This is not for the faint of heart.
But I'm so self-conscious now. Every time I open a book. And
by the way, I'm not going there tonight. But just to give you a little idea, that's why the laws of modesty are so important. Even behind closed doors. Because we're not alone. This world is a physical world. We're also very, very strongly connected. If we believe in spirituality, prove it. That's real spirituality. You think that nobody sees? It's not true.
I just have a question. Maybe a bit of... So when you cover the hair and you say, well, I will cover my hair outside, but you think that at home you shouldn't be covering. And I spoke to a woman that said that she even covers her hair when she goes to bed.
There's a story in the Talmud. I forgot her name. There was a woman that will come back to me, and she merited that all seven of her sons became high priests in the temple. And they asked her, what was her secret? And she said two things. She said one was that she never let the walls of her home see her head uncovered. And the second one was that she was never intimate with her husband before 1 o'clock in the morning. And that was why all her children became so holy. The simple reason, I'm not going into it, why do I say that all the time? But the simple reason is because bringing a holy soul into the world takes pure, direct thought, a tremendous amount of direct thought. If there's outside noise, extraneous things around, then that's not a pure, direct thought. So that's why, spiritually, intimacy only takes place very, very late at night when there's complete silence that holy souls can come into the world. By the way, I think it's a really important story to tell to young couples. And I don't understand why no one tells these stories. These are so important. People need to know this. There's actually a recipe for bringing holy souls into the world. Our world has become so disattached from spirituality. We can't even relate to these things. That, just as an example, that something like sex in Judaism is the holiest act. The holiest act. We live in this Christian-filled world where it's the church says, no, 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 no good. Abstain, abstain, abstain. In Judaism, it's the holiest thing, but it has to be done with holiness. It can't be done with stupidity. It's a very holy experience. So back to the point here. Hasidism explains that what was left over after the Tzimtzum were the Rishimu, otherwise known as the letters of residue. The world was created with 10 utterances. Asara mamarot nivra ha'olam. This world was created with 10 utterances. It was words that God used to create the world. So the Rishimu is the leftover letters after the world was created. The Zohar says that God engraved the letters in the supernal purity in the Ein Sof, which the Zohar refers to as, interesting, translates as supernal purity. This means that when it arose in God's will to create the world, God measured out within himself in potential what would exist in actuality. Kind of like an architect. In the Zohar, this act of measuring out is referred to as engraving letters. These letters signify the structuring and formation of the divine will prior to the Tzimtzum. They are the potential for limitation that existed within the Ein Sof. There's a reason why the Ten Commandments were given on stone. What's the difference between writing on paper and etching in stone?
Couple of days labor.
Okay, aside for that.
Last one.
Aside for that. In the actual act, what's the difference? Come on, Dan, this is your world.
Something's been taken away rather than added.
The etching in stone, the word, the letter becomes one with the stone. You could never take the letter out of the stone unless you destroy this more of the stone. The letter and the stone become one. That's how God made this world. Explained in another way. In order for the finite to take on the parameters and definition, there had to be some form of definitive language. For example, like computer language. There had to be like a specific type of code, a language. There had to be some, these dimensions are called letters. And the letters are the building blocks of words which can build sentences and speak a language and subsequently communicate. The Kabbalah called these letters kelim, vessels. And the meaning within the words, lights, orot. So, there's orot, there's light, and there's vessels. Every sentence is composed of letters which are the vessels for the meaning of the sentence and the message conveyed, which is called the light, the or. The revelation of the vessels came about through the Tzimtzum. Although they existed in an abstract form before the Tzimtzum, within the Ein Sof was also the power of finite. Prior to the Tzimtzum, these letters were filled with the infinite light and they represented only the potential for limitation. So what did Tzimtzum do? Tzimtzum took the light and put it into the vessel. This is a very important concept in Kabbalah. I want you to take note of this. We're going to have a whole class on this in a different course. Orot and kelim, which means light and vessels. This is a very important concept in Kabbalah. So, let's talk about recipes here. A Kabbalistic recipes. Let's open the cookbook. You want to have a blessing in your life. Things aren't good. Or things are great, but you want better. Or things are better and you want even better. You want a blessing in your life. There are blessings all around us because the light is everywhere. Is darkness a creation of its own or is it the absence of light? Darkness, did God create darkness, or is it the absence of light? as far as we're concerned today, it's the absence of light. There's no darkness created. There's light everywhere. All you have to do is flip the switch. The problem is like this. There's blessings everywhere. There's light everywhere. Where are you going to put the blessing? You got to put it in a vessel. There's lots of water in the ocean. You want to take some home, you've got to have something to carry it in. We need to create vessels. You want a blessing in your life, you need to create a vessel. You need to create a vessel that's big enough to hold the blessing. And the vessel must be empty. We want huge, empty vessels. That's the goal. Which means if you fill it with junk, with emotions and bad feelings and grudges and hate, and all the junk that you can fill it with, well, there's no place for the blessings to get into. Or there may be a little bit of space left for a little teeny blessing. How do we create vessels? Anyone?
Meditation.
Anyone else?
Work toward your goal. Do the things that will conduct you for your goal.
Goals?
Yeah.
Anyone else?
Action.
Huh?
Action.
Action. Right? We're in the world of Asiya.
Yeah.
It's got to be an action. You're right. You're onto something. It's got to be an action. Everything in this world must directly relate back to action. Meditation is amazing. And essentially, meditation will lead to action. So meditation is very important, but meditation alone will not create the vessel.
Forgive.
What kind of action?
A mitzvah.
A mitzvah creates the vessel. A deed, a good deed, creates vessels.
Which kind of mitzvah?
Any. We don't know. We can't measure which one's bigger than the next. So, you want to create a big vessel? Do a lot of mitzvahs. We don't know which one is bigger. Sometimes a small mitzvah can be a big one for you, so it becomes big. And a big mitzvah can be a small one for you.
Is there a difference between God and God creation?
Yes. Yes. Tzimtzum.
Okay.
There's no difference between God's and God's creation. There's a difference between the amount of light that God chooses to put into that creation, which means the angels have more light than we do because it's closer to Ein Sof.
Okay. Closer means?
Closer in the there's a ladder. There's a ladder
it's
here.
It's not the distance, it's the
well,
space.
It's not even space,
okay.
Because only we have space.
Okay.
It's light.
Something in between.
Something that we're using analogies for that we can understand.
Right. Because
we're calling it light for now.
Because I said that God purposely drew back the infinite to create the space.
That's right. Which means that essentially there's the same God in you as there is in the angels. The difference is in the angels it's more revealed God, and in you there's more concealed God. So the same God. The same amount of God. Same amount of light.
Uh-huh.
The angels it's a little more open.
The same essence.
Okay. But we're a little more watered down, so to speak. But it's not really watered down. It's that God put more open light in the angels and more contracted light in us.
But what was the purpose to create the creation? To create the creation?
This, my child, takes a lot of time to understand. This is the whole basis of Kabbalah. You asked the question.
Can you summarize it?
Philosophers, theologians, The greatest Kabbalist of all time asked, why did God create this world?
You'd like the summary version.
One page.
How many volumes of Kabbalah are there?
I don't know. I have 7 bookcases, and I think I don't even have, like, a fraction of it.
Okay.
You want the cliff notes? That's a library full.
It's up to you.
But again, it's all sequential, because once you understand one level, you'll understand another level, and then the conversation gets different. Mm-hmm. I assure you, it gets to a point where you're like, oh my gosh, I will never know the answer to this. But at that point, you're so happy not to know the answer. I can't explain it. You're like, wow, I don't want to know the answer. Yeah. It's like the mystery that never stops being mysterious. But the more you learn, the more enchanted it becomes, the more exciting it becomes, the more mysterious it becomes. And all you want to do is know more of it. And the more you know, it's very powerful. The function of the Tzimtzum was to remove the Or Ein Sof that flooded the letters so that limitation and finite can be actualized. In order for there to be diversity within creation, it was necessary to reveal different qualities or attributes within the divine. These attributes are called sefirot, very important. Keep that word in your mind, something else that you're going to really need as we go on here. Sefirot, does anyone ever study the sefirot?
Well, there are 10.
And they also call them chakras. Sefirot, it's not chakras.
Well, no.
But that's in modern... whatever jargon, they call us if you're out. So, these attributes are called sefirot, and they are the building blocks of creation. Every sefira, every attribute, is composite of lights and vessels, of orot and kelim. Every sefira, every single one of God's attributes has the Orot and Kelim, the lights and vessels in it. It has to be emphasized that the existence of the Sefirot in no way implies the plurality within divinity. A lot of people talk about the Sefirot, and once you start understanding them, you're just like, hey, look at this. Oh, you know, because the Greeks couldn't understand it. It drove them crazy. The same God is kind and severe? No. How can the same God be kind and severe? There's a God for kindness, and there's a God for severity. Now, it happens to be, shockingly, that two of the sefirot, one is the sefira of kindness, and the other one is sefira of severity. So a lot of people look at the sefirot and say, wow, there's plurality, look at this, we have a whole new God. It's not what it is. And let's understand it. The sefirot are not separate entities within the Or Ein Sof. To quote from Sefer Yetzirah, we spoke about it last week. Who wrote Sefer Yetzirah? Anyone in their notes? Abraham. Abraham wrote Sefer Yetzirah. So this is a direct quote from Abraham's book, Sefer Yetzirah. What's level 2 called?
Yetzirah.
Thank you. Connection. Sefer Yetzirah is about level 2. Abraham's book is about level 2. Yetzirah. It's the most understanding. It's a very complicated book to understand, but it's the most understanding we have of anything having to do with Yetzirah. So, in Sefer Yetzirah it says, the 10 sefirot are bli ma, without substance. Their end is wedged in their beginning, and their beginning in their end, like a flame bound up in a coal. For God is one, and there's no second to him. This is the direct quote from Sefer Yetzirah. The same metaphor is employed by the Zohar. Let's hear what the Zohar has to say. The Holy One, blessed be he, emits 10 crowns, supernal holy crowns, with which he crowns himself. He is, they, and they are he. just as a flame is bound up in the coal, and there is no division there. So there's no plurality when it comes to Sefirot. Hasidism compares the Sefirot as they were in the pre-Tzimtzum state to the potential of a spark from a flintstone. What would be pre-Tzimtzum on our ladder? Ein Sof. It's like the spark of a flintstone. Even if the stone has been immersed in water, there still remains potentially the ability to strike the stone and make fire. In no way could we say that the spark has a separate identity within the stone. However, as the Sefirot emerge in the post-Tzimtzum stage, they are indeed like a flame bound up in a coal. The flame definitely has a separate identity, yet its whole existence is completely bound up in the coal. So, before the Tzimtzum, it's like a flintstone. The potential for the flame is there. After the Tzimtzum, it's like the flame, but no coal, no flame. You still need the coal to keep the flame ignited, even though you may think that the flame and the coal are separate entities. You understand the analogy? Kabbalah is filled with analogies. It has to be, because it's the only way we can understand these concepts. So if you don't understand an analogy, you may miss a very important concept. In order to visualize what happens after the initial Tzimtzum, Reb Chaim Vital, who is he? Who is Reb Chaim Vital? Primary student of whom? Arizal. Wrote down all the teachings of Arizal, and it's because of him that we have all the teachings of Arizal, because Arizal passed away at 34. So, according to Reb Chaim Vital, he presents the following graphic. Imagine a circle, and the circle is full of the Or Ein Sof. No finite existence may be created within the circle, for the light of the infinite totality occludes it. The Tzimtzum concealed the Or Ein Sof, the infinite light. I'm using Or Ein Sof, you know what it is already, right? I can use it freely, correct? Or Ein Sof, if I say Or Ein Sof, you know what I'm talking about. Good, I'm happy. So that within the circle is left a void within something finite that can be created. The next stage of creation was the introduction to the circle of a beam. Pre-Tzimtzum, the light is called the Kav. Take note of this. Very important Kabbalistic concept, the Kav. Pre-Tzimtzum, it's the beam called the Kav. That beam that shines the light down onto Tzimtzum. What is it called in Star Wars? The beam. What's the beam called?
The saber.
Huh?
The saber.
The saber. The saber. The saber is called the Kav. Contained within this light were all the ingredients for the creation of the various worlds. The difference between the circle and the beam of light is that the circle has no beginning and no end. Around the circumference, one can move infinitely. The circle represents the infinite light of Sovev Kol Amin, the light that surrounds all worlds, which is peripheral to all worlds. Hasidism calls it Or Makif, a transcendent light. We started speaking about it in the beginning. There's two types of light. There is Sovev Kol Amin, which is also referred to as Or Makif, and this is the surrounding. Surrounds. It's the big God. It surrounds the world. It's not worried about details. It just surrounds. Sovev Kol Amin, also known as Or Makif. These two terms are going to be very important in the coming weeks.
Is it the surrounding light?
Surrounding light.
It's when Shabbat they say Or Makif, Or Makif Jesus.
Yes. But it has a different definition there, but yes. The Kav, on the other hand, is a line which has a beginning and an end. The Kav represents the chain of worlds in the post-Tzimtzum state in which there are higher worlds and lower worlds, rather like the various rungs in the ladder. In the higher worlds, the light is very intense and God's presence is absolutely manifest. As the Kav progresses, the measure of light is reduced further and God's presence becomes more concealed within the vessels. At the center of the circle is this world. It's the lowest point of the line at which the light is totally concealed from the physical creation. That's called Memalei Kol Almin. So basically, this is Sovev. It's a circle. Sovev also means a circle. Sovev. It surrounds. It comes. So it's very much like, imagine like a circle over this world, like the ozone layer. It surrounds the world, protects the world, doesn't permeate the world. The Kav, the Memale, the Kav goes through all the stages, and it goes right into this world. The ray of light goes right into this world, the Kav, and affects this world in every detail. Every molecule, every organism, everything in this world. That's Memalei Kol Almin. That's God within every aspect of this world. I realize there's a lot of different interpretations, but we're going to go according to this one. I wasn't sure which one to use, but you know what? What's going to be? So we're going to say that Bria is number two and Yisir is number three. It'll be easier. I think it'll be easier also later, because to say that Yisir is higher than the angels gets very complicated. So we're going to say Bria is higher than the angels. So there's four worlds. Atzilut, which also is emanation. There is Bria, which literally is creation. And there is Yetzira, which is called formation. So we're going to say the angels hang out in Yetzira, which will also explain Sefer Yetzira later if we ever study it, Abraham's book. It'll explain better because we'll understand the angels a little better. And then Asiya, our world, the world of action. To help understand this difficult concept, let us imagine a beam entering a circle and then creating concentric circles like the layers of an onion. In our case, the circles are worlds. There are four levels of worlds. Atzilut, Bria, Yetzira, and Asiya. The Kav enters the circle, or in our analogy, the outermost layer of the onion, at the first stage of the world of Atzilut, Bria, Yetzira, and finally Asiya, which is our world. Follow Atzilut, reaching deeper and deeper towards the center. The light of the Kav is the light of Memalei Kol Almin, the light that fills all worlds. This light is an Or Pnimi. Very important. Another important. Memalei Kol Almin is also called Or Pnimi. Inner light, as opposed to Sovav Kol Almin, which is called Or Makif, which is an outer light. In the teaching, metaphor, the purpose of Einstein removing quantum theory from his mind was to reveal elementary mathematics to the student. Correct? Remember this? When we first started tonight? The process was for the purpose of revelation, so that the student would eventually progress to higher levels. The same is true of the Tzimtzum. The purpose of the Tzimtzum was not concealment, but it was revelation. A descent for the purpose of ascent. Through Tzimtzum, a finite world was created. The Torah and Mitzvot can be likened to clothing or garments that are covering the Or Ein Sof. This world, with all its limitations, cannot contain the infinite light in its revealed state, but it can in concealment. Within this world, one could reveal the pre-Tzimtzum, Or Ein Sof, as it's enclosed within Torah and Mitzvot, fulfilling the purpose of creation, creating a dwelling for God in this lowest realm, which is the entire purpose, to create a dira betachtonim, to create a dwelling for God in this world. That is the purpose of creation. I answered your question. In terms of human history, the revelation of this light will take place in stages. At present, the Shekhinah, which is the female, Shekhinah is God's presence in this world, or there'll be many interpretations later on, is concealed. But as history progresses into the Messianic era, there'll be a greater revelation of pre-Tzimtzum light. And even more so in the time of the resurrection of the dead, should also be noted that our actions and mitzvah performance in exile will eventually participate the revelations of the Messianic era and resurrection. Exile is externally a result of sin. Internally, the real purpose of exile is to reveal self-sacrifice for mitzvah observance, mesirat nefesh. This acts as an arousal from below and elicits a response from above in the form of reward in the Messianic era. Kabbalah explains that the various names of God, one may not pronounce the four letters of God's name as they're written due to the name's great sanctity. We shall therefore employ the word Havaya, which is Yud, then a Hey, then a Vav, then a Hey. The Tetragrammaton is we're going to call in our classes Havaya. The Yud and a Hey and the Vav and the Hey is composed of three words. Haya, he was, Hoveh, he is, and Yiyeh, he will be. This name describes the Soviv Kalamin, that the round, the circle. In a later chapter, we'll discuss the name Havaya in a different context, as it relates to the four worlds. The name of God that describes Mimale Kalamin is Elohim. The numerical value, we spoke about numerology last week a bit, the numerical value of Elohim is the same as the word nature, Hateva. They have the same numerical value. Remember, numerology is very important. Words that have the same numerical value have direct correlation. So nature and Elohim are the same, implying God's presence within creation. Kabbalah talks of the unification, Yichud, between Havaya and Elohim. There's two different levels. The Torah tells us, know this day that Havaya is Elohim. We say it in the Shema every day. Hasidism calls it a unity of Soviv Kalamin and Mimala Kalamin, seeing God in our lives as both transcendent and immanent. We can now explain why God first revealed the infinite light and why only then, through the process of Tzimtzum, revealed the finite light. The purpose of creation is dira petachtonim. That's the whole purpose for God creating this world, is to create a dwelling place for God in a lower world, in this lower world. In order to fulfill this purpose, two things were necessary. A, the creation of a lower world. Right? God had to create this finite world. And the ability, B, for the lower world to be absorbed within divine. Initially, God revealed to Ein Sof the transcendent light of Soviv Kalamin, and Tzimtzum, the process of Tzimtzum, revealed the Mimale Kalamin. Since the latter stems from the pre-Tzimtzum light, it always has a desire and ability to be nullified to its source. What happens to a flame? What does a flame do always? Rises higher. Why? Because it always wants to be closer to its source. Where is higher? So too, exactly with the soul, exactly with Malakal Amim, exactly with Tzimtzum, always trying to rise higher, going back to its source. Simply put, God wants a person to live within this world and be above it at the same time. God wants a person to live within this world and be above it at the same time. Being within is Malakal Amim, while staying above is Soviv Kalam. In the mundane activities of business pursuits, eating, etc., one should know God in all their ways. In spiritual activities, one stands above the creation when praying or learning Torah. The purpose of creation is the fusion of the two. This is achieved only through bittul, nullification. Important word, keep that. We're going to talk about it in great detail later. Bittul, to atzmut, to God himself, in fulfillment of his desire of creation. I also gave you a little thing here, modes of creation, the kav, first the circle, and you can see how they all correlate.
Hi, Rabbi Bernath here. I have some great news for you. My popular 4-week course, Kabbalah for Everyone, is available right now for free for the next 50 people who download it. All you have to do is go to www.theloverabbi.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and you're going to see the download button right there. In this course, I talk about the Kabbalistic secrets to relationships, to wealth, to happiness, and balance. This special offer has been dedicated in loving memory of Elie Dorfman. I look forward to hearing from you and hope you enjoy the course. Now on to today's episode.